Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events, a series of readings, performances, lectures, and discussions. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
My name is Steve Wright. I'm the Executive Director of the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation. I know this is a very broad topic that we're going to go over today, and we did last week, and the next one will be as well. But we're here for people with Parkinson's, and if anybody knows anybody with Parkinson's disease, is living with it, or is a caregiver specifically for Parkinson's, we want to be here for you. Our mission is to improve the quality of life of people living with the disease, their friends and their family. So this is what we do. This is why we exist. We've been around for about 16 years, and I think we do some pretty good work. I want to thank Melissa for all her work in putting together this program as well as everything else. But our website, nwpf.org, is chock full of information. It's the best NWP as in Peter, F as in Frank.org, best Parkinson's website in the world. I'm so humble, but it's true. So, all right, I'm here to introduce a couple people. This is Erica Campbell. Erica has so many letters after her name that I get blinded, but she has a doctorate in education, she has a master's, and she is a licensed mental health counselor. Erica has over 20 years of experience working in education, healthcare, and mental health fields. She specializes in education and training in dementia care, advocacy and end-of-life issues, resource development, and family dynamics in coping with grief and loss. She is currently the Life Enrichment Services Director at the Hearthstone, which is a facility right by Green Lake. It's a great place. So Erica is a friend of Northwest Parkinson's Foundation and just a really good person, so we're thrilled to have her here. Go.
Thank you. Thank you. Good day to you all. It's noon, so I can't say it's morning anymore. Thank you all for coming out to this presentation today. It was really when Melissa and Steve came and approached me about doing a little talk for the Parkinson's Foundation, the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation. They said, "Well, what is really what's a really a passionate part about Parkinson's education for you?" And I find in my daily work as a social services director and a life enrichment director that I run across a lot of people with different needs with movement disorders who really don't find a lot of crossover with each other. Could be an age difference that somebody has a young onset before 55, or it could be that somebody is just been diagnosed recently and is looking at other people who are farther along the continuum and is really uncomfortable with that, kind of looking down what might be a possible future for them. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to really help people think about the questions that you want to ask if you're actually in looking down that long tunnel towards living arrangements outside of your personal home. And there are a lot of questions that I have come to find out that people are not asking when they're looking for new living arrangements, new care settings, that I think are really, really important for you to know about before you make any decisions on making a placement change. So with that, I wanted to start with just kind of a broad explanation of different care settings that are available to us. These are really general care settings that are in the community. And please understand, I'm not really even going to touch on the financial aspect, which is another five topics altogether. But for this, I just want to kind of clarify different kinds of placement that are generally offered to people in our area, and they might be a good things for you to be thinking about. If we look at the top here, we're looking at some different areas you want to think about are being in home, having your in-home placement, which is always aging in place is usually people's number one desire to stay at home. being in home and what are the services that you can have come to you? How can you get your needs met in your own home that you are very comfortable and happy with? Beyond that, we also have the residential care settings that are licensed, which include boarding homes, assisted living communities. These are two big places that have a lot of DSHS intervention to make sure that they follow strict regulations on care management so that people are actually getting what they need. And then beyond that, there is the concept of non-licensed care, which are places that are for older adults, generally over the age of 55. Sometimes the cutoff is 62, and they are places for general living for people that that have certain needs but are certainly independent enough to make their own decisions. Usually these people will eventually age out of that situation because of their health care needs require more more help than an independent status can give them. Okay? So we're going to talk a little bit about in-home care. And in-home care, there's some really wonderful things that are popping up in the world right now. There's some really wonderful ways that we can connect with, and Northwest Parkinson's Foundation has some really good resources, too, about connecting with organizations that can come and help you with any kind of home care, nursing, home repair, ramp building, things like that. There's a lot of services out there that can help with that. It's just finding those, being connected to those. Most people who go to who have in-home care are really looking for someone to kind of be their eyes and ears to make sure that things are being helped along. Particularly with Parkinson's disease, there's quite a bit of cognitive challenges that go along with that, partly because of the brain disorder and partly because of medication issues. And so having that extra set of eyes and ears to make sure that things are being taken care of can be really helpful, and having somebody from the outside can really help keep things on track and not have to go down, not have a decline any faster than necessary. Okay. And the thing about long-term care workers that you should know about, too, is there's a difference between the types of people that you would have coming into your home to do long-term care. It could be a friend or a neighbor down the street who's doing a service for you. It could be a licensed person, an LPN or a CNA, certified nursing assistant, licensed practical nurse, an RN, registered nurse, someone coming in to do a service for you. You really want to make sure when you're looking for someone coming in from outside to come into your space that you feel very comfortable and confident that they are dependable, that they have passed a background check with the state, that they are really going to be working well with a vulnerable population, which would be the person with Parkinson's, and the family dynamic around that. Okay, so really consider the fact that if you're looking at a caregiving agency, even just for a companion help, that to get a baseline companion, which doesn't have any certification attached to it, just someone to spend time with mom or dad or sister or brother, that can be you know, baseline of 2 hours a day, needing to spend 2 hours a day at $20+ an hour just to have this person come in to help you. Then it ratchets up the more assistance that you need: bathing, feeding, dressing, medication management. That all incrementally goes up. So it can be very costly to have that in-home care. So if you're having somebody from outside come in, think about how you're going to vet this person. And there are very good ways that you can vet. If you contact Senior Services, they can help you with information on vetting people for this kind of work for you. You can go to agencies, which has already done the vetting, but of course that adds an additional layer of cost to your care. Which is fine, because they also the added bonus there is that you'll have support all the time and not have somebody just calling in sick or calling in emergency. You'll always have that backup. So, but it can be a very costly proposition. There are organizations in Seattle. NEST is one of them. If you have not heard of NEST, I would urge you to check it out. It's a fledgling program for kind of a quid pro quo neighborhood care consortium where the neighborhood actually looks after itself. And it started back in the East Coast, and it's starting to make waves all over the country. It's a really amazing program, but it's in a very localized area right now between Maple Leaf and Greenwood Avenue. But it's definitely something worth checking into, these new levels of how does the community help itself and do it in a very low cost or no cost way. Okay. Going into the licensed residential care, so if you are actually looking at licensed places, a nursing home, assisted living, and boarding homes are the three areas that we'll be talking about right now. They're very heavily regulated. Nursing homes are the most regulated in the state, looking after the education levels and the standard ratios of caregiving that staff and residents have in a nursing home. So in a nursing home, definitely you're getting the 24-hour care with all of the medical management. It is the most expensive, which can be augmented with Medicaid and Medicare, some Medicare resources. But basically, the nursing home option is the last best care for a person who has so many critical needs that they cannot be cared for anyplace else. Okay, and I bring this up first just to get it out of the way, not to scare anybody. I wanted to just talk about the licensed options for you right now. So in a nursing home, basically the residents would be getting everything that they need in-house, the therapies, speech therapy for swallowing evaluations and things like that. And they're also going to get the rehabilitation to stay at the highest peak that they possibly can. Okay, adult family homes and assisted living. In adult family homes is a lesser level of care. And this is something that we're going to be coming back to in a little bit. So I'll just touch on this right now. But in assisted living, that essentially means that there's a level of competence and care that the staff can provide for your loved one. When your loved one reaches that level, they may not be able to care for them anymore, and that may not be an appropriate setting. So please consider, in a chronic situation like Parkinson's disease, that just because somebody has moved into an assisted living community does not mean that there may not be another move entailed. And this is really critical, because you want to think about the person having built up the relationships and built up the structure and built up the day-to-day activities in a certain community. When they get beyond that level, they're going to have to start that process all over again. If that community does not offer another level of care, like skilled care, they may actually have to move to a new place, meet all new staff, start all over again. And this can be extremely upsetting to people's baseline when people have been going on a trajectory of you know, slower declines, because they're getting the support they need and the staff knows what their level is. To have such an abrupt change can be absolutely, absolutely detrimental to their future health. Okay? In a boarding home, as opposed to an assisted living, a boarding home is a smaller entity. It's usually a house that has no more than six residents in it capacity. It's usually run by, owned or operated by somebody in the medical profession, or has a medical person tied to it, like an RN, who kind of sets out the structure for this. Now, the thing about boarding homes or adult family homes. The thing about adult family homes is that they don't necessarily have that level of medical competency 24 hours a day that you would look at in a different level of care or a different setting, like a nursing home or even assisted living. They may just have CNAs on staff, certified nursing assistants, who are giving medication management but don't really understand the intricacies of a particular disease process like Parkinson's disease. So you really want to think about if it's a placement issue and finding somebody to move into a boarding home, they have an adult family home, they have some nice offsets, which is more a little more community, you know, small structure. But you really, really, really want to vet the owner operator and the staff what their level of competency is with Parkinson's disease and movement disorders. Because this disease requires so many specific issues, specific competencies around medication management, timing of medications, certain body control functions to ward off constipation, certain swallowing issues that pop up. You really want to have a very, very mindful staff who knows that they're seeing something that needs to be addressed and how to address that and be on time and know why it's important. You know, oftentimes if you're in a care setting, nurses get doctor's orders from the doctors saying that you have these certain times of the day to dole out your medications. And within that, they usually pack a two-hour window around the medication so that you have 2 hours before you have a two-hour window to get your medications. And that's so that all of the 50 people in your community can get it within that same time. So it's built in as kind of a timing that, you know, if you have a morning medication, you have a two-hour window around medications. That doesn't work for people with Parkinson's disease. You need to get your medications exactly when the doctor prescribes them. And you cannot veer off that time. And so it is imperative that the place that you are looking at understands the exact significance of timing and why it's important. Somebody not getting their medicine in this process will lose so much in the long run for the next, you know, several hours or days. It is really hard to recoup that level of status quo for them to come back to. So, are there any questions about assisted living or the boarding homes, assisted living, or adult family homes at this point? Okay. So yes, the adult family homes are regular. They're just neighborhoods of very small groups of people, and they're licensed by the state. But again, consider the fact that they were never created to be ideal settings for people with specific needs. So that's why you really want to go out there and check to see how the owner-operator, what their relationship is to something like Parkinson's, so they can actually tell you, yes, we understand all of the issues that come along with that. Okay. In the non-licensed, you might have heard of some of these communities like SHAG communities or senior living opportunities for people who are over the age of 62. Some are over the age of 55. It's low-income housing that has some certain parts of it that are safe for people to move into. They do not offer any kinds of nursing services at all. So, at best, they might have the community might have a kind of an overseer who does house repairs and might connect to a care management team, so that the person doesn't fall through the cracks. But essentially, the idea of these non-licensed communities are really about somebody finding a safe environment where they can live. But it's very independent. They still take care of all of their own needs, their own entertainment, their own appointments, things like that. So this is not a really good opportunity for somebody who is looking down a longer pathway. It will bring in. You'll need to be bringing in more information and more of a care team as time goes on. And this is not a really great place for that to happen as time goes on. Okay. In addition, continuing care retirement communities. I work in a continuing care retirement community, the Hearthstone, which is the only 10-story building on Green Lake. You'll see it right next to Spuds. And it contains all of the levels of care that somebody would need for moving along a continuum. They have independent living, assisted living. We also have a secured memory care area and a skilled nursing 24 hours a day. So the intention of that is that somebody can actually go through the continuum and at the end of the day have a very similar care team because they've known them from the beginning when they were independent all the way through to the end of life. They'll have a very similar care team working for them, knowing what their needs are and getting them the level of help that matches their needs. This is again not a perfect scenario for some people because a continuing care retirement community. There are different variations of this too across the country. People have been working on different experiments, trying to see how to have somebody age in place, but also have their community around them be able to support that. If you can imagine moving to a community and saying, you know, you move in at the optimum age of 65, which nobody does anymore. I don't think they even did that when it was an option. But if you move in at 65 and you're surrounded by 65-year-olds and you're all getting older together and you're aging in place, that is a really wonderful scenario until your peers start getting older and older and sicker and sicker. And then this new demographic of 65-year-olds come in, and they say, "No, I don't want to be with this cadre of older people." You know, that doesn't make it so that people staying in their same place can be a really difficult for sustaining as a business model, because people want to stay with younger, healthier, vibrant, and places with more opportunities. So you'll see along the conversation all across the country and across the globe in aging is aging in place the best idea or going along a continuum where you keep moving to a new level of care? Is that better and just kind of keeping things going? And the jury's out. But I can tell you right now you will always have challenges. And what I want to do today is talk about the specific things that you really want to think about when you're vetting a community, whatever it is, for somebody with Parkinson's or a movement disorder to be going into. Okay, so the question was if if you're moving intentionally into a care community, knowing that the end result is that everybody is going to die in a long-term care. What does it matter, or what exactly? So we're all looking at something, even if we know it or we don't know it, that we are all going to get sicker and frailer, and that should be built into the plan. That and that is such a beautiful thought, except in a practical sense. In a long-term care community, in any community you have, you're going to have some dynamics of a kindergarten playground going on. And that's just the unfortunate fact is because of the business model of long-term care and the amenities that people want to provide for people, especially people who do have the resources to live in a community, they are very, 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 there can be a lot of challenges around, I have paid this much money and I don't want to see these things. I do not want to look at anybody who is frail. I'm really, and I find that this, and I know you can speak to this as well, in long-term care, there's going to be a certain amount, and I would say it's a healthy amount of people who who really feel that, not in my backyard is kind of the standing thing. So we have to make adjustments for that. And we will be getting into that, too, because particularly for Parkinson's, and I think that Parkinson's itself is going to be the up-and-coming, the new disorder that is going to be parallel to the work of what they've done with Alzheimer's and dementias in creating certain care, like really a lot of research and care innovations and communities that are specific, ultimately, initially, people did not want to be segregating populations because why can't we all get along? But there are some populations that really, really benefit from being segregated to a point, not isolated, but segregated to a point. Dementia, it can be one of them in memory care communities that really function around that. It can be much healthier to have people who have these deficits not being with people who can be very mean and very judgmental and very bullying. So I believe that Parkinson's is going to be in that same vein because of no other reason except that they may, somebody with Parkinson's may show a physical sign that might make other people say, well, you need more help and you shouldn't be here. Or, you're too slow to be on the elevator, so you should be taking a wheelchair everywhere. People will pass judgment on people with movement disorders, and part of it is also educating other people to work together in community. But until that time happens, I want to educate you on what to be looking for, just for the protection of yourself or your loved ones. These are really, because you don't want to show up in a place that you think is just wonderful and beautiful on the outside, aesthetically pleasing, nice staff, and then find out, oh my goodness, they don't have 24-hour nursing staff available. I didn't know that, or I didn't know that that people with Parkinson's are supposed to use a different elevator than everybody else because they are too slow, or something like that. So we'll be getting into that too. Good question, thank you. So questions to ask. Some of the questions asked, these are three really main questions to ask. Does the setting offer 24-hour licensed nursing that will meet the strict medication disposition needs? Extremely important. I can give you an example from my own community. Our community has been in the community for 47 years. And just recently, within the last 3 years, did we actually get in our assisted living, did we get 24-hour nursing care? What we did provide before that was 16-hour nursing care with emergency nursing coming up from our skilled nursing center in the middle of the night if somebody needed that. At one time, that seemed like a reasonable approach. Who needed nursing in the middle of the night unless it was an emergency? Didn't seem to be really, and it seemed to work for the purposes that we had at the time. What we came to find out was we were getting more people with Parkinson's disease coming in who were needing these round-the-clock medications and having round-the-clock issues with balance gait, bowel and bladder issues, things like that, a lot of pain management, a lot of lethargy. So it was really, that time had sort of slowed for the staff because they were dealing with so many things with these particular residents' needs. What ended up happening is we did go to a 24-hour nursing model, which has been a godsend because we actually had to, in the past, we had to people leave our community because we didn't have that 8-hour on the floor nursing available, and it made it really impractical to give out those meds at those particular special times. So that was a lesson that we learned the hard way, and it's really imperative that you know that if you're going into a place, do they have the medical needs that you need to have all hours of the day. Does the setting assist with arrangements for transportation to medical appointments as ambulation becomes more restricted? This is also a thing too. When you're going into the, you're talking to the marketing people in a community, and they're trying to sell you on what are our benefits? What do we have for you? A lot of times you'll hear, well, we have transportation. We've got free medical transportation within a 7 or 10 mile radius of our community, and we'll take you to any doctor's appointments you want to. You know, your eye doctor and your dentist and your whatever you want to go to. However, if your health needs require more assistance, they're going to require, or especially if you're having ambulation problems, they're oftentimes they will say, we can't help you with that. You're going to have to get a cabulance. And so even though they offer it to you up front, really find out what exactly does that mean. Will they have somebody who can assist your with transportation? Will they have a buddy who will go and be with the person if there is any cognitive problems or just, you know, exhaustion problems, you know, just the fatigue that comes in? Will they be able to get from the door of the car to the appointment safely? And who is actually going to do that? Transportation is going to be a huge issue for all of us. So please think about transportation as one of your most important questions to ask when you're moving to a new community. How am I going to get my loved one from A to B as they deteriorate in their strength and mobility? Okay. And let's see, what directions are other people in this community facing in this kind of care? What is the trajectory? What do you see other people doing? Are they staying here successfully? Are we being able to treat them successfully? Are you making them move to a new community altogether? So this is a really particular thing if you are, if you're a person who is going to an assisted living community, knowing that the assisted living community will probably not be able to meet those needs. So what are the endpoints where your loved one, you or your loved one, is not going to be safe to be there anymore? Is it going to be, some places will do, the restriction cutoffs are any continence issues. If you have continence issues, if you have bowel or bladder issues that are more ongoing than not just off and on, but consistent, that can be a key indicator that you're no longer appropriate to be there. If you need help with transferring from a bed to a chair or down the hall or something like that, do you need one-person assistance? Do you need two-person assistance? That may be an indicator that they're no longer obligated to take care of that level of need. Are you having swallowing issues? If you're having any kind of swallowing issues that make it impossible for you to eat the food that they prepare for you without certain, special factors involved, maybe cutting up the food or processing the food in a different way, you may not be allowed to be there anymore. That might be an indicator that you have to leave. So find out these things early. What are the cutoff points where I am no longer allowed to be in this community and I have to move on? Okay. Excellent question. So along these lines, when you're looking at contracts for different communities, is it a good idea to have a lawyer or some legal person check out the contract to make sure that these things are spelled out? Absolutely. Absolutely. Please have a lawyer check that out. And try to, and you may also, you know, consider the fact that you may have to feed the lawyer the information too. They may not know the specifics of Parkinson's disease or a certain condition that somebody has. So you may want to just tell them what is the cutoff point? What are the fine lines that we're looking for? Because they could read it and not know that that somebody who has one person assist is different than a one person transfer situation for some. So you'll just need to work with that legal person to get the right questions asked. But excellent question. Yes, I would absolutely, because the contract language is can be really confusing anyway, and especially most people do it in a state of crisis anyway, so they're not reading very closely. So definitely try to have somebody else. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Thank you for asking that, Rick. So the question is, are these the third point? What are the directions that others with this type of condition experience through the continuum of care? Are these things that are kind of loosey-goosey within a community, or are they actually written in the fine print? And they are written in the fine print. Every community has its own understanding of terms that it writes down for everybody, and so that you actually get it spelled out. The point is, they know what it is because they've had to work through all the bumps and all the legalese. You may not know these things until you get to the point of saying, well, why can't mom be here? You know, why can't dad be here? You said that you just said 2 months ago when she was accepted into this community that she was okay, and now you're telling me she's not appropriate anymore. They'll pull out that sheet of paper, and they'll indicate, well, these are the reasons why. You know, she needs much more assistance than you let on, or you understood, or that she understood, and we're not allowed to take care of that level of care. We're not. That's beyond our scope. So, good question, Rick. Okay, so big things, big list of staff continuing education. I would highly advise you to look in and ask the marketing team, and then go to the director of nursing and ask, what is the education level that your staff, particularly your nurses, what are they getting? But what's the continuing education around these issues, particularly for people with Parkinson's and other movement disorders. As you can see, you know, constipation is an interesting one. I put that first because I find constipation to be an interesting, it's an interesting topic. There's been a lot of research that, and we've all heard all of our lives that you use bulk and fiber to keep the body going, to keep everything, you know, moving along perfectly. And they're, you know, if you go to a Parkinson's specialist, they'll tell you, you know, too much bulk is actually not healthy for a person with Parkinson's. It actually strips away too much of the liquid in your body, sends it to a place that cannot be extracted, and leads to more constipation. So giving high fiber foods may not be the best thing in mind. You want to give them something like a Miralax, which is apparently the ultimate laxative, but it's really helps the body, you know, process. It really helps in this particular condition. If you're working with an old school nurse who is not getting continuing education, is saying, you know, just eat another bran muffin, you know, just do these other old school things that you think, that's not going to be serving yourself or your loved ones by having somebody not getting this updated information. So really, you know, I would just suggest, look at all of these indicators here. Your sleep disturbances. Look at all of the crossover things that we have here too. Sleep disturbances, the hallucinations and delusions, the medication-induced confusion. All of these things, you can see the crossover of how this can really lower somebody's quality of life, and they're all intermingled with each other. If you can get them straightened out, if you can tease them apart and get them straightened out, you can keep someone's baseline at a much higher level for a much longer period of time. You want to know that your care team has that ability to tease these things out. Okay, so really push for I want to know what the CEUs that people are going after. I want to know what their organizations are putting on. Looking at the Alzheimer's Association is a great model for all of the Alzheimer's and dementia organizations. This big push is such a great model for things like Parkinson's at this point, because they have done such a great job of taking this thing and saying there are situations around this that do not apply to anybody else. You know, same is true with Parkinson's. And so I think if we really look at that way, that that these things really don't, these are really particular, and to keep somebody's quality of life much higher for a longer period of time, we're going to have to really parse out particularly Parkinson's and movement disorders. Okay? Any questions about this list? Yes. Well-being. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great point. So to add to the list of continuing training is cultural competency and cultural conversations too. Definitely knowing who you're working with and what their background is, what their lifestyle is, what their preferences are, their communication style, their things that are important to them. Absolutely. So important. I left it off the list. It's going on to the next one. Thank you. Okay, access to wellness programs, too. Looking in a new community, you want to look at what their opportunities are for wellness, okay? Wellness, you'll hear this is a big key, you know, it's a big hot topic these days, and it should be. You should have things that are of that you can access yourself in your own community. So going out to having on-site workout programs or gym programs that are run by appropriately trained staff, access to PTOT and speech therapy within the home so you don't have to leave the home. Having access to a registered nutritionist, super important for people with Parkinson's disease. Mental health counseling, pastoral counseling, good things to augment the mental and spiritual, existential questions going on. Support groups, having access to support groups. I find this to be, and I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, that in some communities you'll have people who all have a similar situation going on, but they're not talking to each other. They're afraid to talk about it. So how are the support mechanisms in place, like a support group, a caregiver support group, a resource development group, opportunities for volunteerism and things like that, so that people still feel engaged with the community. Do they do like the Parkinson's walk that's coming up? Can you get your community to actually rally together for a cause that they don't know much about? Maybe the staff, the residents and staff don't know much about. Can you use that as an education piece while kind of building on something for our local organization to keep that going as well, keep the education going? Yes, definitely. And alternative groups too. Dance for Parkinson's is such a wonderful program. Unfortunately, it can't be necessarily in every community themselves. And I know in my community, it's very and I'm sure that many of you can relate to this, that the fatigue that goes along with Parkinson's can be so it can just be blindsiding. You can't really make plans. It makes it difficult to make plans because you don't know how you're going to feel a half an hour before you're supposed to be at that event or meeting or thing. So how can we do other things through video or through podcasting, through having guests, making it available that groups can come out and do dance classes, music therapy classes, Tai Chi and yoga. Any kind of thing that enhances somebody's mindfulness and well-being. Okay. Okay, dining room policies. I'm going to go through this. I'm just touching on this because this is such a big issue. When you're looking in a community, please, please, please check on dining room policies. There's been a big controversy about how much you pay should afford you the right to look at appropriate people or not, And I know I did phrase that very well, but some of you can, just pulling your hair out right now, just going, are you kidding me? But there are some communities where they have to put on restrictions in the main dining room, that people are not allowed to eat in there because they are not socially appropriate to be there. So I really want you to think about this, too, that some of the things that can keep somebody from being allowed to be in a main dining room is being able to transport themselves to and from a dining room on their own steam or with assistance if they had somebody, somebody who was not a staff person taking them to places. Being able to maintain being on time. Just like dining rooms are essentially just like any other restaurant in town. They do not have staff training to help with anything, any kind of food issues or anything like that. So if somebody needs help with cutting up food or not remembering what they ordered when it comes to the table, they can't identify it on the plate. Maybe their vision is such that they're eating with their hands. These are all things that can actually get somebody removed from eating in that dining room. And I tell you this as just something to be mindful of. It is totally out there that that people can be restricted from main places if they're not deemed appropriate to be there. They get moved to an assisted living dining room or a skilled dining room. And so if you have big feelings about that, just know that now, know it up front while you're going through asking about what the
availability is in the community. And moving to higher levels of care. Okay, what are the things that are going to get somebody to move to a higher level of care? Hallucinations or delusions may be the deal breaker, that somebody is not safe to be on their own anymore in an assisted living capacity with help. It may be poor judgment or safety awareness. This is a big one. If somebody is thinking that they're able to make safe choices, but they're really not, they're walking around without their walkers when it's medically indicated that they need to have their walkers, or things like that. And extensive assists for most activities of daily living. The transportation, bathing, dressing, toileting, things like that. And so know when the cutoff is for the community that you're looking at, when the cutoff is when they require you to move to another level of care. Okay. Any questions? Any questions? I hope that was helpful. I hope that was helpful. It was not meant to be too scary, except that in my experience with people with Parkinson's disease, it's a two-folded disease process, because it is a chronic long-term disease that does go down the continuum, and there's a lot of physical manifestations that people are seeing outside. There's a lot of judgment that goes on with it. People do not understand this disease who do not have experience with it. They do not get it. And part of our job is to keep educating the community about what Parkinson's disease is about. But until that time, while that's going on, you have to be your loved one's best advocate and make them feel safe and loved and not at fault for a disease process that is absolutely terrifying, especially to people who don't understand it, you know. So the hope is that we can all work together and be our own support and keep the words going out that this is something that people can live with happily and successfully for the rest of their lives if we just give them the support that they need. So, all right. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.